All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're at the Sports Medicine Update. I've got Emily Gardner, physical therapist, working with Memorial Hermann Ironman Sports Medicine Institute. And you just finished doing a talk about connecting or doing therapy with young athletes. And so let's go ahead and redefine, what did you say was a young athlete?
Yeah, so a young athlete, that is going to be someone who falls within the spectrum of athlete development. A pediatric athlete is going to be someone who has not yet hit skeletal maturity. They don't have any growth hormones, or they don't have any estrogen or testosterone going through their body, and their growth plates are wide open, and their ligaments are lax. And then you're going to see kind of a gray zone as they transition from pediatric to adolescent and then to an adult. And that age range can be anywhere from 10 years old all the way up to 17 years old. So it's a very gray time, and you really have to look individually at each athlete to see kind of where do you fall on that spectrum.
Mm-hmm. All right, so again, the pediatric athlete, you said you're looking at the hormones of the skeletal maturity. What are some of the indicators, like if you were to look at one, how would you know? I mean, first you would probably look at the age and then get an idea for that. So then what are you, because you're not doing an x-ray on everybody as a physical therapist, what are you doing to identify that?
Yeah, so I'll look at their mobility. If they tend to be hypermobile or fairly mobile, then they're likely to be a little bit younger on that spectrum. You can also look at sex changes. So if a boy starts to have some facial hair, then he's likely farther along on that growth spectrum. If a girl is showing sex changes and just looking more like a woman, then she's likely farther along on that spectrum. And then, of course, with boys, the deepening of their voice. Those are some of the soft characteristics that you would look for. And then with a clinical exam, like I said, they're going to be likely a little bit more hypermobile if they're younger, they also won't really have developed much muscular hypertrophy. They're still going to look pretty soft or long and lean. They won't really have much development of muscle hypertrophy.
I got you. You mentioned avulsion fractures, and you said that's not one of the most common. You said apophysitis is actually the most common clinical diagnosis you see?
Yes.
All right, tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so an apophysitis is a tensioning of a ligamentous or tendon attachment on an apophysis. So an apophysis is just the attachment point, and it is a point of weakness. That bony fragment to which the tendon and ligament attaches is not fully ossified with the underlying bone. And so that is a point of weakness where when the tendon and ligament pulls excessively hard, whether it's because of tight muscles or because of poor mechanics or just genetics, then they're going to have that bone fragment is going to pull away a little bit from the underlying long bone, and then they're going to start to get pain at that site, at that point.
All right, so we have some young athletes, and I know that like with the Osgood Slaughters, it happens in growing athletes and ones that are working out a lot, that kind of thing. It's been a while since I've talked or heard somebody talk about it. Can you tell me a little bit more about what is currently being done for, say, the 14-year-old athlete that has that bump on the anterior part of his shin?
Sure. Depending upon how long it's been there, obviously rest is effective, but you can play through it to some extent. You can keep trying to participate and see if you're able to tolerate it. It's very individual athlete specific as to who's going to be able to play through it. And in the meantime, you want to stretch both your quads and also stretch your hamstrings. These are things that are just going to loosen the tension on that side of the avulsion. Pain modalities in the meantime are going to be ice massage, and also you can try some patellar taping. You can also try some tendon loading exercises that you would typically do for a tendinopathy. There may be a tendinopathy component to that athlete's pain, so it's worth doing some quad sets, see if their pain goes down. And then also, like I said, stretching hamstrings and quads is very effective and helpful, and especially hamstrings, actually, even more so than quads. Although the patellar tendon is attachment to the quad muscle, oftentimes hamstrings are what's tighter, and they are the antagonist that really restricts motion during terminal swing phase when you're sprinting, and so your quads are fighting really hard against a tight hamstring. So often I find it's more the hamstrings that need to be addressed than the quad muscle itself.
All right, so for a young athlete, we use the foam rollers a lot at my school, but the foam roller on the hamstring is pretty difficult. It's more effective if somebody was to lay down and use the hand roller or something like that. So what do you recommend for stretching the hamstrings with some on a young athlete?
Sure. So I really like contract relax. I think some of those are really effective to get the muscle to relax as you're stretching. Yes, I think foam roller is helpful, but I find that to be more helpful for quads and IT band and your vastus lateralis. But for the hamstring, some low load, long duration stretching with contract relax applied into it. And I'll often teach my athletes how to do a contract relax on their own, so they incorporate that every time that they do a hamstring stretch. And I feel like they get a deeper stretch because of that. And then I think the hardest part is just consistency. Get them to do it every day, a couple times a day. Is just hard to be that consistent. Yeah. For anyone, not just our young athletes.
If you're not playing, then it's easy because you're coming into the athletic training room. But if you're playing, you have to get changed and get out there.
Yes.
So it's tough to get all that stuff done.
It is. It is.
You talked about Little League elbow, which is a separation of the growth plate rather than
The avulsion fractures. So it's an apophysitis.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's Little League elbow is a traction apophysitis at the medial epicondyle of the elbow, and it's the attachment point of the UCL and the common flexor pronator mass. So for an older athlete, what would be a UCL tear, it's going to present more like a medial epicondylitis. And it's just, again, it's a pulling away of that growth plate.
Right. And so for me, looking at it, again, I'm dealing with mostly high school, some junior high.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to really tell me, hey, you need to have this looked at? Hey, you need to make sure that this is not a growth plate or apophysitis issue?
Sure. So, again, apophysitis you can play through to some extent unless it becomes avulsion. So I would say if they've been having pain, if it's incredibly acute onset, that's when I would, and if they have ecchymosis, some bruising, some swelling, that's when I would think maybe this is an avulsion fracture, not just an apophysitis. But if it's been more gradual in onset, if they are clearly in the pediatric realm, they don't have any facial hair, they haven't really bulked up yet, that's when I'm thinking more apophysitis as opposed to a UCL tear. Now, if they're 16, 17, they've got facial hair, okay, I'm actually probably thinking more UCL tear, so I would probably refer them a little bit sooner. But if they've only been having pain for 4 to 6 weeks and it's kind of comes and goes, they can be managed conservatively in the training room or in the PT clinic. But if pain persists for more than 8 to 12 weeks and it seems to be getting worse, I would go ahead and refer them to a physician at that point for imaging.
Okay. One of the things you also mentioned was the young athlete, you know, we're talking about low back pain, and one of the things that was kind of most interesting to me is you said the band athlete that isn't necessarily lifting weights isn't in shape, mm-hmm. but they're having to carry this object out in front of them, whether it's the tuba or the drum. So at what point, how would you work with that band athlete? Because they're going to come to me and say, hey, my back hurts. And then, you know, typically if we have low back pain for more than 2 weeks, we're going to try and send them for an x-ray, make sure that there is no,
sure.
No fracture, stress fracture going on there. But with that band athlete that's not doing anything other than carrying that same weight over and over, what are you going to do?
Oh, it's hard. It's so hard. So those are athletes that I feel like come in with a very low level of strength and conditioning. They're not really prepared. They're unprepared. And so for them, it's going to be a little bit about movement analysis. Let's see if acutely we can take the load off in some form or fashion. Do we need to change your straps? Do we need to change your setup? Do we need to change something about the way that you're carrying this object? And then for their long-term health and wellness, trying to likely get them involved in a sport. Realistically, if someone's in a middle school or high school setting, it's unlikely that they're going to get going on a strength and conditioning program on their own, of their own time, and just to structure that into their life. So if you can get them involved in a sport that is going to then pay dividends when the band comes back around the next year, I would say that's probably going to be your most valuable tool to get them prepared for band the next year. But for that year, it's just going to be strengthening and then trying to see if we can change the setup of the way that they're carrying whatever instrument it is that they're playing, to see if we can offload them some and work on posture, make sure their posture is right, but just do a movement analysis to make sure that they're offloading their low back as much as possible.
All right, so you also mentioned, I think earlier, talking about tendon loading. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what that means?
Yeah, so this has been, I would say over the past few years, has been the treatment of choice for tendinopathies. So if you have an adult patient who's coming in with a patellar tendon pain, we'll often put you through a tendon loading protocol, which involves starting off with quad sets. So let me backtrack a moment. So if you muscles and tissues in your body respond to specific loads, so we have to be specific about the way that we apply loads in order to strengthen a tissue. Bones get stronger with compression. So that's why if a patient or an athlete has a fracture, they may make them weight-bearing prior to full bony mineralization because they want to get some of that healing response by getting axial loading through the bone. A muscle responds to contractile loads. That's why we strengthen, you do squats, you do leg press, you do bench press. That is a contractile motion. It's going to strengthen the muscle. And then for a tendon, it is a non-contractile tensile unit. It is meant to take tension loads. And so in order to strengthen a tendon, you have to apply tension loads. So that's going to be isometrics. So quad sets, you can do an isometric in a knee flex position on a leg extension machine at varying angles of load, depending upon where they have their pain. So if an athlete has pain in deep knee flexion, I would likely try to apply isometrics in a deep knee flex position on a leg extension machine. And then you can progress to isotonics after you've finished a course of isometrics for a week. Some athletes respond within a day or two, and it doesn't take very long, but that helps to load the tendon, and then it responds to that tensile load. Whereas when you're doing a squat, you're doing an isotonic contraction, you are utilizing the tendon as a tool. You are not rehabbing the tendon. Whereas an isometric, you are rehabbing the tendon. So that would be a tendon loading protocol. Would start from isometrics in a quad set, which is a quad shortened position. So it usually tends to be pretty non-painful, and then you can progress from there into more challenging positions.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. At the end, you had advice for young athletes. So I'm going to read through these, and then I'm going to kind of go back in and question some of these. So you said, do what you love, just like your job. Make sure you're investing in something you enjoy. Practice good technique when you are young. Stay globally strong as you mature. Strengthen the things that you neglect that will help you keep you healthy. And then take personal responsibility for your health and game time readiness. And now, you mentioned throughout the talks, the sports specialization is part of the reason that we're seeing these with kids, and then a couple of these on the end, stay globally strong, so don't be sports specialized. But how do you balance the first statement, do what you love, with the rest of those? Because doing what I love, I love playing basketball. I don't like playing football. I don't like running. I like lifting weights, but I'm starting to run. Like, I ran 6 miles for the first time the other day. And it's because I know that changing it up, doing something different is good for me long-term health. I don't love running, but I'm doing it. And so how do you balance those two statements?
Yeah, I think kind of as we as adults, I think that's part of the emotional and psychological maturation of an athlete and of just a person, is realizing that the things that we love to do often require things that we don't love to do, but they allow us to achieve our goals. So as with pretty much anything, whether it be marriage or whether it's a job, I love what I do. I love being in the clinic every day, but I have to do paperwork, and it's a total bore, and I hate it, and I don't ever want to do it. But it allows me to then continue as a clinician. It allows me to do the things that I love to do, which is treat my clients and treat my athletes and see them on a daily basis, and it's just part of what happens. So I think teaching our young athletes that, you know, yes, you love basketball, but you know what? You may love basketball, but you're going to be a better athlete if we train things you don't typically train. Or you may love baseball, but you really need some core strengthening. So I think we should sign you up for a Pilates class or a yoga class or something like that. So even though they may hate that one little thing, or they may just not love it, it allows them to be better at the thing that they do love. So it is, I think it's something as adults that we understand, and it's something that kids don't totally understand. But I think that's part of the process of if there's something you love that much, you're likely going to be willing to do some other things if you see the end benefit, or if you trust that what you're being told is the end benefit will come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. All right, so in there, when you mentioned, you know, you really love baseball, so let's sign you up for Pilates or core strengthening, but you didn't say, all right, so you need to go play basketball. So a lot of the times we think you need to be a multi-sport athlete because we look at the NFL draft and, you know, 29 of the 32 first-round picks were multi-sport athletes in high school and that kind of thing. And we quote those numbers, but that is a good idea because you don't have to play a different sport. You just need to take time off and do something different.
Right. Just be diverse, however you want it to be diverse, but work out other parts of your body. And absolutely, if you're like, let's say you're in select baseball and you're on a tournament team, and really, if we try hard, you might have a month off per year. Ideally, I would probably want you to take maybe a couple months off per year. But knowing what's realistic, then you don't necessarily have time to also be on a swim team and the school football team. Like you don't have time for that. But you do have time if your family's a member of the local YMCA to go participate in a Pilates class and go participate in this. Or, you know, maybe have your coach talk to some of the other coaches. And when the cross country team is doing some of their training in the fall, great. Go join with a couple of their practices. You don't have to be on the team, but join in on some of the practices. So I think there are ways to be well-rounded that don't necessarily require you to be in multiple sports. If you do have the capacity, great. I think go for it. But I think there are other alternative avenues to stay well-rounded.
Yeah, because part of that conversation recently is, you know, the multi-sport athlete works if you're really good. If
yes.
you're not, then you're going to be decent at one, and then you're going to sit the bench on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you go, just saying, hey, be part of the cross country practices, or be part of, you know, basketball practice. Even if you're just on the practice squad, you just show up 3 days a week, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
just doing something different, or like you said, going to the Y. Or I know there's several athletic trainers that do host like Saturday morning Pilates classes, or
totally.
Know, they partner with like
yes.
a Rossi or something like that. They'll come in every so often mm-hmm. and lead those courses. And so that's a good way to think about it differently, way to change perspective instead of just thinking you need to play more than one sport. Well, no, you just need to do something different.
Exactly. Our bodies respond well to it. And I think when an athlete can take a full, like, long-term perspective on their career as an athlete, it pays a lot of dividends. And I think when you offer up some of the alternatives, I think it is a little bit more feasible.
Mm-hmm. And then you also said develop lifelong habits with these young kids, because that's one of the things we see all the time. Kids go over to the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
All right, put 45 pounds on the bar, mm-hmm. do a squat. Well, they can't squat without weight. Let's
right.
start. You know, let's just teach them how to move correctly from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such an important thing. And we just, I forget it. I don't do back squats very often. So I put, you know, just 135 on there. And I was
mm-hmm.
like, all right, well, I'm just do a couple sets of these just to kind of get the feel for it. But then lost my balance, fell forward, hurt my back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't I just get the I should know better. I tell this to my students all the time.
But
we just have to remember those things as well. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you.
Awesome.
I have three young kids, so it's important for me to remember
these
things.
Yeah, for sure.
As I'm teaching them growing up, and, you know, they go to the weight room with me and stuff like that. So if I can teach
them
to move and do
different Absolutely. Things, pays huge dividends down the road.
So, mm-hmm. All right. Well, Emily, I really appreciate it. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, find out some more, how they can do that?
You can just reach me by email. It is emily.gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, at memorialherman.org.
All right, and this is Jeremy Jackson. This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Gardner2018. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Gardner2018. I'll do my best to have her email up there and her presentation linked to this as well. So, again, if you want to get a hold of Emily, emily.gardner
mm-hmm.
At memorialherman.org. So, for the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Jeremy Jackson, Emily Gardner, that is a wrap. Thank you.
Thank you.